On this episode of The Edge podcast, Ursula Williams, Executive Vice President of Staffing Industry Analyst, joins ClearEdge CEO Leslie Vickery for an in-depth conversation on the future of SIA and workforce solutions, diversity within the staffing industry, and the importance of putting yourself out there. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome, everyone, to the Edge podcast. This is Leslie Vickery, the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing. I'm very pleased to have as our guest on today's show, Ursula Williams, who is the Executive Vice President with Staffing Industry Analysts. Welcome, Ursula.
Thank you so much, Leslie.
You've been in the staffing industry for nearly 30 years, with the past four spent at SIA. Tell us a little bit, I'm very curious about this, the transition going from the corporate side to SIA, and a little bit about the role you play today.
Okay, great. Well, so funny question, because that was probably one of the most difficult decisions that I had made in my career. I was really concerned about leaving a space that I thrived in, that I loved for my entire career. And at the same time, I've always been fascinated by staffing industry analysts. I was a client, I attended conferences, and I almost seem like the best of both worlds, in that you can be involved in providing insight and advisory to all of the staffing companies and the enterprise buyers and the suppliers to the staffing industry, and at the same time not be completely in it. Although I think that the P&L responsibilities and the customer facing responsibilities were really hard for me to separate from, because that's something I absolutely thrived in. What most people come to realize pretty quickly here is that we still have all of that here too. We're not just having conferences and doing speeches and traveling all over the world. We're running a business.
Right.
We have a lot of products, and we have a lot of responsibilities that are just like what our clients have within their own businesses.
What are you doing today at SIA? What's your role specifically?
So specifically, as the Executive Vice President of SIA, I get to kind of oversee all the different departments in terms of the products and the things that we deliver to our customers on both sides of the business, the staffing companies and the enterprise buyers. At the same time, day-to-day, I have responsibility for my specific groups, which are marketing, operations, technology, digital solutions, our entire conference group, in particular the sales to the registrations that we drive. So it's, again, the best of both worlds, because I'm able to be more strategic and provide a lot of support to all of the groups and all of our products, and then still have my day-to-day responsibilities of my own groups.
It really is, and we kind of have that in common, coming from the industry and then now working with the industry. You go from working perhaps for one company or brand and being able to support many, which is one of the things I love about it as well, being on the ClearEdge side of the house.
It's fun, because what happens is, you know, my entire career, I went back and forth. I would be in a corporate environment, and then I would be out in what we would call the field environment. And then I'd get promoted, and I'd go back into the corporate environment, and then I'd go back in the field environment. And in a corporate environment, you tend to really work for the people that are on the front line. You're working really hard for those regional managers and those vice presidents that are out there driving the customers and the business and taking care of the candidates. And here in this role, it's really great, because I'm able to really work hard for our people that are on the front line and ensure that they get what they need out of the support positions that are here, and still be able to drive, you know, what support's doing. So there's a lot of similarities between what I did before and what I do now, and the rewards are still just great. So it's fun to be able to pull what we did before and bring it here.
Right, and being familiar with SIA, you coming into the position, how would you describe, I guess, in your words, SIA's role in the staffing and workforce solutions industry?
So it's a really good question, and one that we find that people misunderstand all the time. We are a research and advisory firm, and I think you know this, but we're owned by Crane, which is a media company. So, you know, our business is really focused around, you know, elevating the staffing and the workforce solutions ecosystem, but doing that completely through the insights of what we provide through our research and our advisory. And then all of the other, you know, mechanisms that you see in terms of our editorial and our conferences and our certification, you know, and our webinars and our speaking engagements, that's really all to just do the connecting and the elevating and to get the message out. You know, we're not, a lot of times people will say, you know, what's the difference between you and an association? We're not the legislative group. We're purely research and advisory, and our entire dedication is elevating the staffing and workforce solutions ecosystem.
So with that, I would say many of our client marketing strategies, so when we're working with them and putting together their go-to-market strategy and trying to help them get in front of their buyers and build their brands, we focus a lot of time on SIA as one of those options, including CWS, which is right around the corner. So not just in the U.S., but really, first of all, over the past few years, you've really expanded quite a bit as an organization, even globally. And now with the gig economy events, which I'm excited to be one of the speakers at coming up again in a couple of weeks, is that it's truly a must attend event. Everyone I talk to is either they're there and they're loyal to going, or they've heard the buzz about it and they're going. So it continues to gain some traction. So coming on board, you've been able to help pull together some really fantastic programming and obviously this global expansion. What would you say is next for SIA, and what should we keep an eye out for?
Okay, well, first, thank you. You know, thanks for the mention of collaboration in the gig economy. That was a big step for us as an organization. You know, I think people see that title and hear that title and they think, oh, that's cool, and it's this technology movement and what's being done. And it's overlooked a little bit in terms of the tagline of that. It's optimizing the talent supply chain. And when I first came here, what was really clear is we have all of these great people that we work with, but typically they're kept pretty separate. So you have your staffing people and your suppliers of staffing that go to some conferences, and then you have your enterprise buyers that'll go like to a CWS conference. But rarely were we getting those people in the room to come together and to elevate the, you know, it sounds cliche, but to elevate what they do and to solve real problems. So we did that the first year, and it just worked out to be even better than we thought it would be. And yeah, going into it, we're pretty excited about it again, but I fear sometimes that people get caught up in the term of the title and lose, you know, what it's really about. And so whether it's a human cloud company, or it's a vendor management system company, or it's a staffing company, you know, whatever type of, you know, or it's a background checking company, whatever it is, they're all elements of that supply chain. And when they can get in the room and just talk and figure out how to be better together, everybody wins. So, you know, that part has been really exciting for us. We did expand that over to Europe, as you mentioned, this year. And it went incredibly well there also. You know, as far as like new things and what we're doing, we've always been ahead in terms of providing insights of what is going to happen. You know, whether it was back in the day, and, you know, I was a client at the time, but I remember, you know, reading about the VMS and MSP and getting a lot of exposure on that, you know, and even at the time it was like, okay, you know, what is this? And, you know, and I think that what we really work hard to do is, you'll hear a lot about the human cloud and about technology and AI and robotics and improved and different sourcing methodologies. So we'll continue to push pretty hard on anything that is forward and looking into the future. But at the same time, we're really pretty focused on the fundamentals of the business. You know, collaboration in the gig economy gets a lot of exposure, and we're very excited about it. But this is the year also where, you know, Barry wrote a book, and it was called Breaking Through. And that entire book is focused on firms that are less than 100 million. And it's really meant for those staffing companies, which are a big part of our ecosystem today, to be able to have as a tool to growing their business. There's like something like 1% of the firms that actually break through in the United States that break through the 100 million mark. So I think you'll see both. You'll see us being incredibly future forward and, you know, thinking of the future. And at the same time, making sure that we are focused on all the players that we have in the industry. I think the other thing that we hear a lot of that we're working on that you'll see is our clients asking for more how-to. There's this constant need of more advisory. They appreciate our research and they get it, and it gets them either motivated and sometimes scared. You know, we'll get calls and say, I read that and it scared me, you know, because this is what's happening and I'm not sure what to put in place to go do it. And so they want a lot of how-to, and we keep hearing that from them, and they need that. So really probably a little bit deeper in the advisory side of it. And then, you know, you probably know this better than anyone, but consumers digest information differently today. So, you know, you'll begin to see us really leverage more technology to ensure that what we're doing is easily digested and understood, and people can take it and move forward. You know, we just had our forecast webinar call, and it's incredible because the people that turn out for that call to hear exactly what the forecasts are going to be in the various segments, you know, they're responding back to us that they're going in and setting their budgets according to that. And they can read it, but they love coming to the webinar. They love hearing the analysts explain why they are forecasting the way they are and what are all the different pieces that are impacting the various forecasts. So I think you'll see us continue to do more of that as well. And then the geographic expansion. We have got a lot of ground to cover, and a lot of our customers yeah. are covering a lot of ground. So you'll continue to see us doing that. I think last week we were really proud because we had people in every single region that we're focused on, and that was a big step for us to be able to do that. But you'll definitely see us continue to expand in different geographies.
Oh, that's great. I would say from our perspective, that's probably one of the top pieces that we're hearing as of late as we work with, you know, larger companies or companies looking to expand overseas is just that international growth and expansion. So that'll be great. It was, you know, I quote unquote popular back when I was at the interim Cerion days. We were growing like crazy, and then it seemed to curtail a little bit with opening new markets and so forth. And just in the last, I'd say 18, 24, 48 months, we've had a lot of conversations on that. So that'll be great to keep an eye on what you're up to well from the expansion perspective.
Yeah, so it's exciting.
I would say we're excited to keep an eye on it. And I have Barry and Mike Cleland's book sitting on my desk too, and I've read through the stories of the different companies. There's lots of good nuggets in there. Okay, so you and I actually have had the pleasure of getting to know each other even better through working together as judges with the Bullhorn Bullseye Awards. And I know you've also judged the Stevie Awards, and clearly SIA publishes a lot of lists. So you know the importance of the application process. So just kind of shifting gears a little bit, wearing your marketing hat, I guess, perhaps as a learning for those on the line, when you're reviewing the applications, what are kind of two or three things you think are most important or catch your attention? And it could be an executive submitting on behalf of a company or someone in marketing or an agency submitting on behalf of an executive to be part of a list. I get asked quite often why someone didn't make it when they know they were nominated. I'd love to hear your perspective on why you think that happens and what people should focus on.
Great, great question. So first of all, I would go on record as saying it's probably the hardest job ever to be a judge of one of these contests or to sit on an editorial team here at SIA and have to pick who makes those lists. And really, because there's just amazing people out there doing some really powerful and incredible things. You know, if I had to drill it down to one or two things, I would say the first thing is to be really clear about what that particular contest or what are they looking for? What is the time frame, for example? So with our list here at SIA, and then those are run through our editorial team, and our, you know, our chief editor, Subhaja Sriram, heads that up. But when I talk to Subhaja, what happens is she gets nominations, but they're about the person's entire career. It's not about that year. So, for example, our lists oftentimes are about results within that year. So we're looking for what happened this year that really makes that person a standout for this particular sector. And the second thing I would say is it's really important to provide the quantitative aspects of why that person should be on this list, as well as the qualitative. We get a lot of qualitative, and it's about, you can imagine, but it's, you know, this is a really great person to work for. People really enjoy working for this person. The clients enjoy working for this person, but it's not they grew their company by X percent. They expanded to six new geographies. They opened this many branches. They implemented a technology with a return on investment that helped to achieve X results. So that's that quantitative piece that is often left out, and it makes a big difference. Or return on investment, like anything that actually shows, okay, yes, this person did this, but here's what happened as a result of that, would be the pieces that I think are most frequently missed.
Yeah, I would agree. I would say, and yes, we've been part of heated, passionate discussions about different nominations and nominees, and it always does come down to results. What can they show? What are they tracking? And the fact that they can actually track the results speaks volumes to the company and says that that's important from the overall company perspective as well. And speaking of Lester, Ursula, you recently, or SIA actually recently, posted a blog about the backlash you received from the 40 under 40 list, in particular the lack of diversity on that list. So if I'm correct in my facts here, which hopefully I am, I believe out of 40 people, 7 were women. So as soon as, and I'll tell you from our perspective, as soon as you all start publishing that list submissions are open, we share them across our networks, not only via social networks, but with our clients. We pick up the phone and call our clients. We give them recommendations on people who should be submitted, help with the submission process, anything we can do to kind of put people forward and have them be recognized for those lists. In fact, we even had some women we had suggested for the 40 under 40 list, and the companies just, you know, they think it takes too much time, or, you know, perhaps, oh, maybe they're not ready, whatever it may be, but they just decide not to do it. What steps can we as an industry take to make sure people see the value in putting themselves out there, which in turn could actually help on the diversity front too?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, just more communication and more explanation and more inspiring people to understand that they really are special. I think that, you know, the root cause of that is all the things you just said. Either they just don't take the time to get around to it, or they don't feel it's their time yet. And I can guarantee you, there's other people out there, they're not questioning whether it's their time yet. They're letting the judges decide that. So it takes nothing to get a nomination and to get it put in place and to get it rolling. And I will guarantee people that are listening to this, you're ready. If you think you're ready, you're probably ready. You're probably more ready than you think you are. So don't be so hard on yourself. Definitely go ahead and take the time to do this, or to ask someone to get you nominated, because that was a very difficult moment here. As I mentioned earlier, Subhaja's team and the editorial team manage all of those lists, and that was really hard for them. And as you know, and you probably read the response that they published, which they didn't have to. Yep. That was, you know, it was really one email. It wasn't a big, massive backlash. It was one email of an individual that's dedicated her career to the industry, to the business, and someone I've not met, but I know the name. And you know, she just was just expressing how surprising it was. that there were not more females, and in particular in an industry that has a lot of females. And you know, Subhadra wanted to be really clear and transparent about the fact that it is a nominated list and we have to have the nominations. Off of the list for a moment, we see the same thing in our speaking positions at our conferences. We ask people if they'd like to come on. Everybody goes out and recruits their speakers for their panels. And oftentimes, we will have some of the women that we ask if they would do it. And they're kind of like, you know, I don't know that I would be the best, but let me find someone else who would be better. And it's their male colleague. So, you know, or they'll say, you know, I'm just too busy. I'd love to. I've always wanted to. How about next time? So there's this kind of deferring or holding back a little. Just go ahead and put yourself out there. It's just so much fun once you finally do it. And I can't quite put my finger on if it's that whole work-life balance thing, if it's just, hey, I'm just going to keep my head down and work hard and get noticed in a different way. But, I would say we have to keep getting exposure on this issue and continue to ensure that people know that they're doing great things and they are special. And then finally, ensure that they're really putting forward the quantitative, measurable results of what it is that they're doing.
And again, at the end of the day, put yourself out there, and when you do, try to have those results to back it up. I guess, speaking of diversity, just transitioning to a different list, and by the way, I give Subhadra a lot of credit for posting the blog. She, to your point, did not have to do that. People maybe even realize it or recognize it, but, you know, one of the sayings I always hear is if one person sees it, more than likely a lot of people see it and recognize it. So I give her a lot of credit for addressing that, Subhadra and SIA in general. A global 100 power women in staffing list that I am particularly fond of. I remember it's going to be coming out for those listening in mid-October, so keep an eye out for that launch. Clear Edge actually sponsored one of your very first women's luncheons at Executive Forum, and I remember sitting outside talking to Subhadra afterwards, like, wow, look at this room. It was unbelievable how many women were there. And it, you know, sparked this interest in the topic to continue, and calls being had afterwards, and then the creation of the list. I guess, what do you think has surprised you most about pulling this together? And what do you believe it does to help further the topic of diversity in our industry?
Well, so a couple things. This year was not nearly as hard as the years that we've had in the past. We had such a great turnout. So, and I think the list is going to come out in a few weeks, and you'll see, I think, in the middle of October. And I think you will absolutely know what I'm talking about when you see it. But the nominations were spectacular. So we are definitely, making a difference out there, and people are putting themselves out there for that list, and it's showing. So we're really excited about that. I think the piece that you see when you look at that is when you look at the titles, there's still a lot of women that are in the EVP, the SVP, the COO, there's more that are in the CEO slot or the true leadership part of the organization, but there's a lot of other titles that are included in there. And those people will continue to grow in their careers, and they will continue to take on more leadership roles. I'm excited to have more of them on our panels and doing more speaking assignments. But I think those are the things that we see that will continue to just really elevate us and change what, in terms of diversity and the number of women on the list and just in the business in general. It's all good. So there's some really good trends right now. There's still some types of companies where you don't see as many female leaders, but I think even that's changing when you go through and really look at the types of companies that are represented, what they do in their field, from healthcare to all kinds of different sectors. When you look at the size of the organizations as well, there's a lot more diversity that way on that list. So I think that's pretty exciting too, because again, those will continue to be future leaders within the industry, within their businesses and other businesses, and they'll grow and they'll be able to grow their organizations. And I think it's all really good news for the future.
Right. You can tell by the list and the roles and looking at it that there are a lot of women powering the industry, so to speak, and that there is diversity within the sector. It's just, again, getting their names out there, putting it forward, and then continuing to rise them up to that mm-hmm. C-suite. Speaking of the C-suite, I love the saying, if you can't see it, you can't be it. I recently published an article in Entrepreneur on the topic of wearing the CEO hat and how it can be difficult as a female entrepreneur, sometimes having that confidence or lack of confidence to put it on. And I guess, for example, if you can't see it, you can't be it. When you close your eyes or you ask someone, you know, who do you think of when you see or think of a CEO, who do you see? And oftentimes it's a man. It's not necessarily a woman, and that certainly is changing. It should just be, you know, it's a person or someone you've worked with who could be a man or a woman. But what surprised me most about doing these podcasts and hosting events and luncheons and basically participating directly in the, you know, programs that we've put on with the luncheons and so forth on diversity topics is that it's a really long list of talented women, to your point, with the list that you all are putting out, who are often working behind the scenes, but they're really greatly responsible for the success of the other companies. And, you know, in other words, there are a lot of women than we see, certainly, and your list help bring that to light. But when you think of female role models in our industry, who do you see and what lessons have they taught you over the years?
Leslie, there's so many. As you were leading up to the question, all their faces are popping up. And I think, you know, earlier you had said that I've been in the industry for, you know, I like to say 25 years, but I guess you're right. It probably is closer to 30. The interesting thing is I only changed employers 3 times. And a big part of that was because of a lot of the mergers and the acquisitions and how the business works. I worked directly for 5 people. And it was a mix of both men and women. And I think what's most interesting is I've always been able to, when you say, you know, if you have to see it, I've always kind of envisioned who I want to be and what are the best pieces of every one of these leaders that I can take and make it kind of adapt to me and who I am. We were just in Boston with Joyce Russell. Joyce is amazing. And I did have the pleasure when I was in my career at Audia, which is today Adecco, that Joyce was one of the regionals there. And I remember just watching her as she would come into our corporate office and just listening to her and thinking, wow, you know, I want to have that. I want to be part of that. You know, my organization was acquired by Randstad. Linda Gallupo was the head of Randstad at the time. And Linda could come in and she could just talk about those numbers and break something down and give you the predictive analytics. And I remember thinking, wow, you know what? That's really good. You know, I want a piece of that. You know, Teresa Creech was running the MSP business when we were just acquired from Randstad. We were part of Vedior. And, you know, Teresa had this way of just taking something super complex and even sometimes emotional and just breaking it down to it's just business. But yet she'd go through it and she'd be so strategic in her thinking. I was like, ooh, I like that, right. You know, a lot. And then there's just people that, you know, earlier you had mentioned, you know, Leah from Bullhorn. There's other people that you just, either they work for you, you work with, they're customers, that there's just a little piece of them that's inspiring that that you take and go, okay. But again, I worked for probably mostly males. And, you know, the Jack Unruhs and the Tony Martins and the Greg Netlands and the Dan Foleys and Barry and, you know, every single one of them. I think I was really pretty lucky that there was a piece that I could just take away and put it in my, you know, portfolio, if you will, to say, okay, you know what, that's going to help me get to where I want to go and who I want to be and how I want to manage situations and how I want to approach my career and my business. And so I've just been incredibly lucky.
Well, I have to say, Ursula, two things stand out to me in your response. First, you're the first person ever who I've heard say, when I say, if you can't see it, you can't be it, that you see yourself in that executive role. And that's the critical piece here, right? Is you have to be able to see yourself to believe in yourself. And that's fantastic advice. I'm going to take that and use that a lot. And we just had Joyce on our podcast as well. And Emily, who's on the phone and produces these for us, she and I walked away in awe of just the meeting, not only the podcast recording, but just the meeting, and thought exactly like you, my gosh, what are all the things she just said that we can learn from? And we need to write this down, or what?
Yes, exactly.
The energy from people. And you rattled off so many well-known executives in our industry. You've had a blessed career in learning from and being exposed to the best of the best in the industry. And I guess just kind of transitioning that a little bit, kind of thinking of up and comers. So you know, in your role in your career, kind of building itself up and believing in yourself and growing. Your daughter, Dana, is in college studying broadcast journalism. I had the pleasure of meeting Dana at Bullhorn Engage. And we hit it off, not only because she's your daughter, but also because I also studied journalism. And I shared with her very briefly my story of when starting out and how I didn't realize how competitive and cutthroat the industry can be for anyone. And so I'm just curious, for her, when you're looking at advice that you would have for Dana, she's still in school, but coming out of school and getting ready to start their careers, maybe something that you wish you would have known starting out in a strong industry that's known for being competitive. What advice would you have to share with her as she starts this next phase of her journey career-wise?
Okay, so first, thank you for the time that you spent with Dana. You know, you and Robin and Vinda and Joy. So she walked away from that conference just completely inspired by just the people that you are and what you're all doing and what we're all doing. You know, I think in terms of advice, and I say this to Dana all the time, you can be what you want to be. You can kind of have it all. So you can decide what you want to do, and there's so many opportunities, and it's just putting your, getting your focus and putting your mind to it and doing it. And by the way, should you change your mind, that's okay too. And I think that's probably one of the things that, I was probably a little less clear on. I waited a long time to start a family. And part of that was I just couldn't imagine how I could possibly manage, work and a family and all the things that I, and traveling for work and all the things that I wanted to do. And when I finally did it, it's pretty easy, because if you're just focused on it, it's just life and you can do it. And then I think the second thing is, there were times where we really would, back in the day, it was, you can't change jobs. You got to stay in the same job for, I forget what it used to be, 5-6 years. Now it's like, if you're in a job for 5 or 6 years, they think you're not marketable. You got to be changing, especially out here in Silicon Valley, right? So I think that it's okay to have a course correction. It's okay to decide that, I might want to go do something else. And then the other thing is, careers do not go straight uphill. The ladder, it doesn't keep just going up. Sometimes there's a sidestep and there's a little landing over here and you might take a couple steps back. But as long as you're doing what you want to do and you feel that you're moving forward, do it and don't hold back. Just go for it. And by the way, if you get stuck, ask for help. I think that there's a lot of people out there that are willing to help people. And whether it's just through guidance or, an opinion or inspiration or whatever it is, I think that you have to be able to, find some people that you trust and bring them in your inner circle and lean on them when you need to lean on them. Or sometimes when you just want to share something great happened and you did a really good job and you want someone to share that with, you know, have those people in your life that you can do that with.
Well, you know, I really want to have Dana on our podcast as well to get her perspective. And the perspective that I want to hear from her is really the child of a strong, successful working mom. What advice do you think? So to kind of just flip it, right? So thinking about, we're always so stressed out as parents. And like you, I was 42 when I had Grayson, and I'm 45 now. So I have a very young toddler at different stages of our life as it relates to children, but not so much as it relates to, you know, age and where we are from that perspective. But I'll often think of Grayson and what I hope he'll think or what he'll see. What do you think she would have advice-wise for you or other parents from the child's perspective that perhaps could help other women thinking about starting a family or parents and struggling with the thought of work-life balance? What do you think she would say?
You know, Dana, she probably would just say, you know, stop worrying about it. She probably would be, you know, incredibly supportive. And she would say, it's all going to be okay. You know, I can remember times when I would drop Dana off at school and, you know, literally it was practically a flyby and the door was open and I'd get it to a slow roll. But I'd see this group and they looked relaxed and they'd be drinking their coffee and they'd be standing there and they'd be in their casual clothes. And I remember thinking, you know, okay, I'm okay. I get it. But I wonder what she thinks. I wonder if she's like, gosh, mom doesn't even slow down. It doesn't stop the car to watch. And she's late, you know, late. But you know, these people, yeah. Like they're making this a priority because they're standing here and they're taking the moment and, you know, and they're maybe talking to the traffic person or to the principal should he or she come out. And you know what? Dana didn't see any of that. Dana was never a judgmental or judgmental at all, you know, as I was. So I think she would probably say that, you know, stop worrying about it. Don't be distracted by it. Go for it. And you know, clearly there were things that were really important that I thought were important to her, that were important to me, that I would make a priority for. But I learned really quickly, and it was actually from one of the moms that was standing there holding her coffee. She said, you know, every day when we see you drive by, we would do anything to trade places with you. We would love to be in that car, in that suit that we see you in, speeding off somewhere. We would love, and I remember thinking, that's what you're talking about? I thought you were judging me because I was doing a flyby.
So, you know, funny. So
yeah.
Right.
And, you know, and because they said, you know what? Because after our kids go in the classroom, we're not with our kids. You know, we're not. And so, you know, our kids are off doing their own thing. They're not thinking about you. They're having their own lives. So I think that's probably what Dana would say. Don't, you know, stop worrying about it. Stop obsessing about your decision. You know, make a decision. If the decision is either to have a career and to be working out of the house or to work in the house or to not work in the house, whatever it is, be really confident about it and be all in. And at the same time, you can do all, it's not one or the other. I think she also would say, you know what, you can still, just because you're a working, career-oriented person, it doesn't mean you're not going to be a great mom. It doesn't mean you're not going to be great with your family.
Right.
You can, these are not exclusive of one another.
Well, I have to tell you, I actually reached out to Dana before our podcast, and I did ask her the question. So I thought I'd share with you what her responses were.
Okay, so if we were on a Skype camera right now, you'd see like, huh?
Yeah, so this is a surprise for everyone listening. Ursula had no idea that I was going to do this. But I felt like I had to. I felt like, I don't know, I just, it's a perspective. And, you know, I just was really curious to hear what she would have to say. So I'm going to go ahead and share with you a few things. First of all, you're absolutely on the same page. She said, mom showed me that you can and should follow your dreams and be independent, driven women while also being a loving, present mother and wife. These things are not mutually exclusive of one another, huh. And don't let anyone tell you that they have to be. So exactly what you just said.
Okay. She's actually listening to me.
She is. But the one, this really got to me personally because I feel, I wrote her back and I'm like, you just brought me to tears with this one because it's so important to find a partner that allows you to figure out the healthy work-life balance. And sometimes as parents, when you're running around in different directions, you can't always, you're not sure what your kids see and the type of loving and nurturing relationship that you perhaps have as husband and wife or partners, whatever relationship you have, finding that right partner. So this is what she said. She said, my parents have been the greatest example of love I could have ever grown up to witness. They both have worked full-time their entire lives and have gone through nearly opposite 24-hour schedules, being apart for weeks during work travel and plenty more. But every single moment of it, they have been nothing but loving toward each other, all while making me feel like the center of their world. I don't know how they do it. They are a team in the truest meaning of the word.
Wow.
That is
thank
a gift.
You, yeah,
thank
you.
Wow. It's beautiful. And she said, be a working woman and be it unapologetically. You can't be everywhere, but she said, you made sure you never missed an important volleyball game, a graduation, a prom, a speech, first day of school, work, or internship. The things that were important to her, you made sure were important to her. And that she said, I can't even imagine the sacrifices that she had to make to be at all of my important life events thus far, but I know she wouldn't have it any other way.
Thank you.
A phenomenal
role
model to her.
Wow. Thank you. You know, her advice is probably better than my advice. Maybe she should have done this call. I like that part about, you know, being unapologetic about it. But wow. Thank Leslie. Okay. First, you surprised me completely. But thank you so much for that. That's pretty amazing.
With that, we are almost out of time. So I'm going to ask you two quick things. When you reflect on your career, if you can name one thing that stands out as the most memorable milestone, what would it be and how did it shape you into the leader you are today?
You know, I think when it comes to the most memorable milestone, this might be surprising because it's probably not going to be the big promotions. You know, one of the most memorable milestones was when the company that we worked for was acquired. And all of a sudden, I remember exactly where I was the moment I found out. I was in the Boston airport on my way overseas to a big board meeting, actually. And it was a big, big milestone. But in regards to it was a big change. And those moments, those really difficult moments, are sometimes turned out to be some of the best moments you have. So, you know, I remember thinking everything is changing at this very, very moment. All the people that I've worked for, the people that have worked for me, everything. And those times, sometimes where they feel like they're the, you know, probably the most daunting, can oftentimes end up being some of the best times ever. That forced me into a whole nother step in my career and learning and getting exposed to new people and new things and new countries and new ways of running this business. And at that time, I had already been in it 20 years. So, you know, I would say that was, you know, a really pivotal milestone for me and different than what you might think because it wasn't like the pinnacle of enjoyment at that very moment.
Right.
But it was definitely career changing and a little bit of life changing because the reality is you tend to really become close to the people you work with in this business.
Right.
And I knew at that moment the family was really going to, it was going to change. But it was wonderful. So, you know, my advice would be to people that when you know, milestones don't always just come with the perfect package. Sometimes they're coming and they look really scary. But the end, there's always something good. It's what you choose to make of it and how you choose to handle it. But I would definitely say that was a big one.
Oh, that's a good one. It's bringing flashbacks from my career and the times between Interim and Norel and Spherion. And, and so forth. And you're right, those are really pivotal learning moments for your career. All right, Ursula, I could talk to you forever, and I'm sure Emily is ready to basically cut us off right now because this will be officially, I think, our longest podcast ever. But I have to end with a little fun. I love asking this question. Sometimes it makes me nervous because I'm never sure what the other person's going to say. But perhaps you could tell us just one thing we don't already know about you that others may find surprising.
I grew up in a really small community, 500 people. I had less than 20 people in my high school class, and I think most people are very surprised by that, and it was definitely in the countryside. So I think most people are very surprised about that. I believe who I am today was based on, in big part, that culture and that environment. There was no place to hide. You were absolutely encouraged and expected to lead. You were expected to take things on. There was a high level of accountability. There was a lot of emotional intelligence that came with it because you had to figure out people and understand people. And I absolutely love my childhood and love how I was raised. But I tell people that and they look like, you mean like on a ranch? Like, yeah, on a ranch.
Oh my God.
So yeah, most people don't know that about me.
No, but the part about, you know, being forced into, not really forced, but then, you know, the leadership piece and just you have such a strong, great, you know, approachable personality and so outgoing and all of those things that sometimes the opposite of what you may think perception-wise of growing up in a small community, you actually kind of did the complete opposite, which is great. So that is wonderful. Well, Ursula, how could people get in touch with you? Email, Twitter, LinkedIn, what's the best way to communicate with
yes,
you?
Yes, I am absolutely accessible by Twitter. I'm accessible by LinkedIn. I'm accessible by email. The email is on our company website, and you can, there's not a lot of Ursula Williams and Staffing Industry Analysts. So you can find me that way, but I'm really responsive. In terms of any of the private messaging that are any of those on any of those sites, and so whatever works for who's ever listening, or wherever you want to get in touch with me, you do it that way that it works for you, and I'll be there for you.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you again so much for joining us on The Edge, and I look forward to seeing you in Dallas very soon.
Yay! I can't wait. Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, at clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.